You know, one of the really cool things about this, about chapter 5, the one that we've been working on, is that it really explained to me why sometimes it looks like to me that I haven't been able to get the higher power, get the Holy Spirit to operate in my experience the way I think I want to. Because what it's doing is describing the way God thinks, the way a loving mind thinks. And it's the way the loving mind thinks, he says, or God thinks, that actually creates that particular happy, peaceful reality that we are trying to find. You see what I'm saying? So what I've been doing is thinking I can continue to think the way that the world taught me, and I can continue to think the way a fear-based mind thinks, and then I'm going to get the results that thinking like the truth thinks. And then I get frustrated. Do you all ever do that?
I'm doing
that. Yeah, I see that all the time. You know, I observe it all the time, you know, facilitating the teaching, that people get frustrated with the course, but they're not doing it. They're not doing it. It's like they get like, oh, the Course of Miracles doesn't work, you know, and it's like, no, the truth is, I don't really understand clearly how a totally loving God man thinks. And that's what this whole chapter is about. This whole chapter is about how to get the Holy Spirit to function in your experience, how to get God to get involved at a level that we can perceive it. So the voice, he said, the voice of the Holy Spirit is nothing but the part of us that can see beyond where we are. It can bring us what we deserve, even when we're in our lack, fearful mind, thinking we don't deserve it. So I want to get in touch with the part of my mind that's going to take care of me whether I like myself today or not. Where I used to think it was about me getting to the point that I think joyful and feel joyful every second, and once when I correct myself, then I can get the spiritual good stuff. And so the Course in Miracles is trying to leap us to the level of consciousness where we let God work. Where we let God work. And then that's when I came fed up against all my atheistic tendencies. Then I really understood I really didn't believe in God. And that's when I started to really heal my relationship with God. But as long as I was faking it with myself, like I really believed in God, then it was impossible to heal my relationship with God. Because every time this book would tell me to approach my life as if God was real, with that kind of faith and belief, that's what I would watch myself immediately get scared and wonder, you know, how my ego can figure out how it's going to handle stuff. What is that? It's outside. It's outside. Is it in here? Okay. So what we left off at on Sunday was on page 74, paragraph 7. Those of you who are studying the book, you're going to really enjoy my classes more and more and more and more. Because I really want to help you make it easier to read it and get it. That's what thrills me the most. It starts at paragraph 7. First I'm going to read all the way through it, and then we're going to go back through it and see if we can get the message out of it. He says, the Holy Spirit. Now, if you're reading along with me, as soon as the Course in Miracles says the Holy Spirit, you notice that it has a comma right behind that. Whenever the Course in Miracles is basically getting ready to give you its own definition of whatever you're reading, it usually separates it by a comma or a semicolon. So like when it says the Holy Spirit, then what it means is the shared inspiration of the sonship. That's what the Holy Spirit is. It's the shared inspiration of all of us. He said, it induces a kind of perception in which many elements are like those in the kingdom of heaven itself. So when I'm listening to the Holy Spirit, it's going to give me a way of looking at things that's just like the way it really is in the kingdom of heaven, the way it really is when you're really in love, when you're really in peace, when you're really in... See, the Course says there's, you know, there's phony happiness and then there's the real deal. And usually the people that study in the Course are the people who want the real deal, which is they want it to last. They're tired of things that come and go, and now they want something that's real that's going to last. Okay? So he says that it's supposed to be really good. When we're listening to the Holy Spirit, then it gives us a new kind of perception, a new way of looking at things. That is so irritating. Yeah. I'm almost there. I am irritating myself. I'm totally irritating myself. Okay. It's so weird. Did it sound like it's in?
They're doing something on that.
So anyway, so what I want to do is help everybody with the reading of it and the study of it. And so if I say a sentence and you don't get it, just tell me. And then I'll tell you what it said. We just save some time, okay? Like it says, the Holy Spirit, the shared inspiration of the sonship, induces a kind of perception in which the elements are like those in the kingdom of heaven. So when the Holy Spirit, when we're really using the Holy Spirit, then we're going to have a way of looking at things that really sort of like it really is in love, what it's really like in love, okay, which he calls the kingdom of heaven. Then he goes on to say, then he goes on to describe how you can tell when you're using the Holy Spirit's perception. He says, first of all, its universality is perfectly clear, which means no one who attains it could believe for one instant that sharing it involves anything but gain. So the first thing, when I'm using correct perception, then when I share with you my way of seeing things, I don't have any doubt that all it's going to do is benefit you. So when I'm coming from Holy Spirit in me, then whatever I see or whatever I share, I know it's not going to do anything but benefit. That's the first thing I notice if I'm coming from my Holy Spirit man, if I'm coming from my loving man. Then it says the second thing that happens when you're using the Holy Spirit's perception, which is the Holy Spirit's interpretation, is that it's incapable of attack and therefore truly open. And notice that, what does it say right behind it, the next two words? This means. If they said this means, all the way through the book it says that. When you start reading, it'll say, this means, and then I realize, why am I figuring out something that he's telling me what it means? But I found that I was doing that all the time. It's like it's saying this means, but I'm sort of acting like my job studying the course is to figure out. For instance, if I'm looking, if this means that when I am looking in such a way that I think everything I share with you is going to benefit you, and I'm looking at you in such a way that I would never attack you, then my mind is truly open, which means I still don't know everything. I still don't know. I'm not attacking you. I want to benefit you through what I'm saying, right? And I'm open-minded, but I still don't know everything, right? So he says, although it does not engender knowledge, it doesn't obstruct it in any way. So I don't know everything, but if my mind is open and I'm not attacking and I want everybody to benefit through what I'm saying, the Course says, then you're not obstructing knowledge or you're not obstructing your good in any way. So if I don't know what's going on in my life, but at the same time I only want to share perceptions that benefit people and I don't want to attack people and I want to be really open, then I'm not blocking my answer from coming to me. I'm not blocking good from coming to me. I don't have to know the answer, but if my mind will not attack, if I want to benefit you through what I share with you, then I am not blocking the answer. So the answer can get to me. The knowledge can get to me if I'm willing to not want to attack you, just want to benefit you through what I'm saying. That's what it just said. If I don't want to attack you, and I want to benefit you through what I'm saying, even though I don't know anything for sure, then I am in a state of mind that does not block God, that does not block the answer, that does not block the solution. Everybody with me on that paragraph? Any questions about that paragraph? Any comments about what I just said? Everybody's clear. Everybody's got that. If I was to say to you, if you really wanted to have a perception that gave you the answer to all your problems, what kind of perception would you have? What would you say?
Attack.
Okay. And what else?
And benefit.
Thank you. Yeah, the reason why it's cool.
Right,
I don't have all the answers. The reason why it's cool to say it back, because it's not until we start pulling it back out of ourselves that we're going to remember it. And it's okay to say it the way you want to say it. The Course says, but just don't change the meaning. Still get across the same meaning, even though you may not say it exactly like you said it. And like you said, the Holy Spirit induces, I love that, the word induces a kind of perception. And, and the love, the Holy Spirit is, he says, is our sane mind. Of course, says the Holy Spirit means right-mindedness. It's your right mind, okay? And so, he says, so if you're in your right mind, it induces a kind of perception that have a lot in common to the way that it'll be when we really wake up. When we really wake up, everything we see will be benefiting us. When we really wake up, we won't have any attack anywhere in our experience. So he says, finally, your perception has something in common with the way that it really is when you really connect with God again.
Now, it seems to me that that doesn't necessarily mean your ego likes it. I mean, when you say no attack, it's not attack from an ego standpoint, but I'm thinking of myself. I'm working on one issue, but it feels, I can see the loving answer, as you say, but my ego doesn't like it, the loving answer.
That's a natural response of the ego.
That's what I'm saying. It's not all happiness and light, and you feel all great, and da-da-da.
What's the trip is that it is happiness and light in your real self.
In the real self.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm beginning to see, that when I tap into my real self, it may sound crazy to say this, but I'm in total peace,
mm-hmm.
while my ego is tripping.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually in total peace, but my ego is tripping. And so I've had this shift in my consciousness recently where my sane mind is at least 51%.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And so I'm in my right mind enough that I can actually see my ego. And some of y'all know exactly what I'm talking about. It's like you can see your own ego. And sometimes it looks like you're in it. Mm-hmm. And then when you're in it, you're just as crazy as ever. You know what I'm saying? You just go off, you're mad, everything else. And then all of a sudden, you find yourself outside of it, looking back at it, tripping, and going off.
Hmm.
You know? And so that's the difference between shifting into your sane mind and then going into your fearful mind. You know, but what the cool part is to know that, yes, the Course says what makes your spirit happy makes your ego miserable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because your ego, the ego is the part of us that is afraid and doesn't believe that it deserves to have a peaceful, happy experience. So it says that your ego actually gets mad at you when you decide to stop suffering. He says, because your ego believes that for you to even think for a second that you didn't deserve to suffer makes you a liar. You know, the minute I say I deserve love, the part of me that doesn't love me says, you're lying. You know that's not true. You don't deserve love. And you deserve to be punished for telling that lie. You see what I'm saying? So,
mm-hmm.
so the Course is saying, yeah, every time you tell yourself the truth, your ego, but then it also says that your higher mind, or it uses the word Jesus, says, I will take care of your ego and your body so that you don't have to be concerned with it. And so I used to forget that. I would forget that it told me, yeah, your ego is going to come up. And so instead of you being afraid of that, realize that there's another part of you that's now going to protect you from what your ego would do to you. Yeah, your ego, your old self-hatred might want to do something to you, but I'm not going to let it, in other words. Yeah, you're still going to get mad and everything, but I'm still going to give you love. I'm still going to heal that situation. Yeah, your ego is going to get upset, but I'm still going to bring you peace. That's the reasoning of the Course says of the same man. So we shouldn't be afraid of our ego.
But when you're in it, when you're in your ego,
then that's when the only thing that you can do in any given moment is the best you can do in that moment. And then the forgiveness process comes in when you realize that was just your call for love. Your ego is just your call for love. That's all the ego is just another name for call for love. So when I'm in my ego, it would be more powerful to say, when I'm in my call for love, that's not easy. See the difference? When I'm in my ego, this isn't easy. When I'm in my call for love, this isn't easy. So see it as your call for love, and you'll be more forgiving of yourself.
And others.
Okay, but the main point I want to focus on right quick to make sure we get it is everyone clear about how you would be seeing things if you were seeing things correctly? Mm-hmm. If you were. And what is it again? We'd be doing what?
No attack.
We wouldn't see it. Our perception would be devoid of attack. And what else?
We wanted to be beneficial.
We wanted everything we said to be beneficial. So remember, the textbook is the theoretical foundation of the course. In other words, the textbook is nothing but telling you how the whole thing works. It's not telling you that you can do it when it tells you about it. It's just, the textbook is the theoretical foundation. That's another mistake students of the course make. They beat themselves up as they read it, because they think they should be able to do what they're reading about as soon as they read it.
Right.
So the only thing that he told us in that paragraph was how the Holy Spirit's perception operates. It didn't say anything about that's the way you see it right now, or that's the way you can see it right now. I mean, that's what my ego does. Oh, you should be able to do that right. Well, you know you got some attack thoughts. So you should feel guilty, because he just said that if you was using the Holy Spirit's perception, your perception would be devoid of attack, but you just went off just this morning. You know, that's what the ego does. Or if it says that part about, what was the other one? You know, you said something today that you really don't feel like was beneficial to say to somebody. You know what you mean? You know, so if the Holy Spirit's perception is a perception that you don't think that anything but everybody will benefit by it, and yet you're having thoughts all day and perceptions you're sharing all day that you know not necessarily loving, the ego says, well, you need to feel guilty because you're not nowhere near that. Instead of realizing that the only thing this is doing is showing us the way it really operates. And we need to know that before we can start moving toward it. So we need to take that. That's what I love about, it's scary getting into the book the way that I'm getting ready to get in the book. Because that's when the ego is most resistant. That's why it takes more faith to teach the deeper I get into it. Because only the people are going to hang who really are ready for a deep, deep level of getting into the study. And that's okay, because the Holy Spirit is taking care of me. But I got to go deeper. And so I'm thankful for those of you who got the books and you really are ready to go deeper with me, because we'll start to see the miracles happen. But you're going to have to trust me on this. After all these years of sharing this, your ego reactions, and believe me, they're not new to me. And so if you would let me tell you right from the very beginning to go ahead and feel your ego and stop tripping about your ego and go ahead and let your ego, and stop thinking you need to feel good every minute. And when you don't feel good, it means you're not getting it. I save you years of trouble. Because you're not going to feel peaceful all the time on the way to feeling peaceful all the time. It's not going to happen. You know, just forget that. You're not going to feel good every day, all day while you're studying the Course in Miracles. Because it's about you learning how the part of your mind that created that in the first place works, and it's about teaching you the way the part of your mind that would keep you from ever feeling that again works. And then it teaches you how to make that transition from that old way to that new way. And that's what the workbook does. Or just learn how to read it. So I welcome the questions, but let's try not to use it as a therapy session. But more like, let me see if I can get a better understanding of just what that said.
The chapter that I've been working on this week, I've found myself much more resistant to than anything else.
And what chapter is that?
19.
That's the one that I lose names to send my students.
Great.
I've seen whole classes full of 40, 50 people clear out in a 3-week period doing chapter 19. Do you know what the title of chapter 19 is, which is funny?
Yeah.
The name of that chapter is the Attainment of Peace.
Oh,
the whole thing is about telling you. See, the Course tells you the obstacles to what you want,
right?
And people don't want to hear about that. It's what you're doing wrong. And my ego don't tell me what I'm doing wrong. I don't want to hear about what I'm doing. This book tells you what you're doing wrong. And it'll even say wrong. It actually used the word wrong, which isn't politically correct in spiritual circles. You know that. You don't say wrong. Okay, so, okay, then this next paragraph to me is one of my favorite ones, though, because it's so beautiful. It says, finally, so are we understanding that if we don't attack and we want our perceptions to benefit people, then we're in a state of mind that still doesn't know everything, but it's a state of mind that doesn't block the answer, that doesn't block the good. So that's all I want.
Right.
I just want a state of mind that doesn't block the good. Okay? Then it says, finally, it points the way beyond the healing that it brings. And leads that, and so my mind goes, okay, what does it mean to point the way beyond the healing that it brings? It says, well, whenever you see a conjunction or a comma, you'll find that the Course in Miracles is synonymous all the way through. So all it means is that when you're in a state of mind that's not obstructing knowledge, then that can lead the mind beyond its own integration toward the paths of creation. So let's face it, if we're trying to bring our mind to a state of oneness, is that the goal? Well, the Course says that once you get to the state of goal, once you get to the point that your mind is integrated again and you're in one-mindedness, then you're now ready to start creating. See what I'm saying? First, I got to heal my mind, and once my mind is healed, now it can be used again by love. Now God can use it. Make perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
All right? Then it says, now, at the point that your mind is healed and you're moving toward creation, which is the extension of love, that's all creation means, the extension of love. He says, well, it's at that point that there's sufficient quantitative change in your mind that produces a real qualitative shift. In other words, you can think so many peaceful thoughts that the quality of your mind shifts into peacefulness. First, you're thinking a lot of peaceful thoughts or truth thoughts, but the quality of your mind still may not be peaceful. It's like you're reading the book and stuff, but the quality of your mind is still not peaceful. And that's what he's saying. Well, when your mind gets healed, then that's the point that there's enough quantitative shift in those thoughts that you really get a qualitative shift in your mind. You thought it so much that now you're beginning to be integrated because you're not using a state of mind that's attacking. You want everything that you share with people to benefit people. He said, well, that integrates your mind. That heals your mind. And the once your mind is healed, because you just want one thing, peace, you know, that's it. He said, then at that point, you can start creating again. And at that point, your mind has changed so much that now the quality of your mind has shifted. You really have a more loving, peaceful mind. And what's so cool about it is when that happens, people recognize it, even when you don't even see it. I can't tell you how many people have told me that they saw a lot of peace in me when I wasn't feeling peace at all. They saw the peace because it had become a quality of my being. Mm-hmm. And then some people claim they're peaceful and the quality of their being isn't peaceful and you don't buy it. Mm-hmm. Or you go, yeah, you're temporarily okay, but 2 hours from now you're going to be tripping. You know what I'm saying? Because the quality of your mind isn't peaceful. It's just in this moment, your script is being acted out. That's not real peace. The peace that comes from my script being acted out is not real peace.
And the script is our prior training by society for the rest of our life.
Obviously, that doesn't bring peace.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? We wouldn't even be sitting here. So thankfully, we've reached our limit. That's what I like about us. Okay, so that paragraph, 7, everybody pretty much think they got the main points of that one. Anybody want to say what they think, like, basically, what did that say to you? Just for your own remembrance, helping you with your own remembrance. And you don't have to, but I'm going to throw that opportunity open. We got a small group, so let's take advantage of it.
Hey, just gives me hope, because it's been a rough week. Oh, God.
Yes, I know.
Seems to me what it's saying is that if you see and make the effort to see it the way the Holy Spirit is that perception, that it adds up eventually to a qualitative shift.
Yes.
Quantitative goes to qualitative.
Exactly. And what would be the kind of perception that the same mind would have? How would the same mind be perceived? What's the Holy Spirit? How would it be seen? It's basically two ways. He said,
no attack and beneficial.
There you go. No attack, beneficial. No attack beneficial.
For all.
For all. I think that when I say, see, like when I share this with you, I don't feel like it's going to do anything but benefit you. That's how I know this is a perception that came from God. I can say this with no guilt. That's how I know I had this perception. A perception that comes from God is a perception that I don't have any guilt, and I feel like this is the best thing I could possibly say to you, and it's going to benefit everybody. Notice that it's going to benefit everybody. If it's a perception from God, it doesn't benefit an individual to the exclusion of everyone else. The Course says that's how you can tell anything that comes from God or truth as opposed to something that comes from the ego. If it's specific, it's from the ego. If it's universal, it's from God. So anything that's specific is ego. Now, that doesn't mean that the Holy Spirit can't answer you specifically. But whatever the Holy Spirit is doing for you, the Holy Spirit will do for everybody else. That's how you can tell it's the Holy Spirit. Nobody's left out if it comes from God. It comes from the ego. Some people deserve it, some people don't. Fear-based minds exclude. Course says non-fear-based minds include. Okay. All right, now the next section is called A Voice for God. Now, this is deep, man. I'm telling you, it's a trip section, so just get ready, okay? First, I'll read through the whole paragraph. It says, healing is not creation. And when you're reading the Course, it would help you if you fill out the it's with the word. Like, it's like, healing is not creation. Creating healing is reparation. Instead of saying it, because you get lost in the it's. When you first start reading, you're like, which it is it? And then all of a sudden you go, oh, it. You know what I'm saying? You know, so healing is not creating. Healing is reparation. The Holy Spirit promotes healing by looking beyond the healing to what the children of God were before the healing was needed and will be when the children of God have been healed. This alteration of the time sequence should be quite familiar because it's similar to the shift in the perception of time that the miracle induces. The Holy Spirit is the motivation for miracle-mindedness. See the comma, semicolon? Which means the Holy Spirit is the decision to heal the separation from God, from love, from truth, by how letting the separation go. So you heal the separation by letting the separation go. Your will is still in you because God placed your will in your mind. And although you can keep your will asleep, you cannot obliterate your will. God Himself keeps your will alive by transmitting your will from His mind to yours, by transmitting the will, your will, from His mind to yours as long as there is time. The miracle itself is a reflection of this union of will between Father and Son. I love to read it the way it's written and then like really see what it's saying. It's so beautiful. Okay, so here we go. First sentence. So when you say you want a healing, you're basically saying you want to be repaired. Or you want the situation repaired. Okay, everybody with me on that? So healing is not really creating anything. I'm not, if I cut myself and the scab come up on my knee, I'm not creating anything. I'm repairing. So you get repaired, but then after I get repaired, I sprain my ankle, right? My ankle gets healed. Now I go back running again. So I don't actually start moving forward until after the healing happens. So if you're healing, give yourself a break. Because as a matter of fact, you do. If your leg is broken, you do not feel guilty about not jogging every day. Because you know you can't. So that's what the book is saying. If we would have realized that we were here repairing, we would get rid of 90% of our guilt. And so he says, healing is not creating, it is reparation. Now, he says the Holy Spirit, which is our right mind, right, the part of us that knows the truth, he says it promotes healing. And I love how he describes what healing is. He says, I look beyond the healing to what you were before the healing was needed. I'll say it again. If I want to heal with you, then I will look beyond the healing to what you were before you needed the healing. I need to remember who you were before you went crazy. I need to remember who you were before you got upset. I need to remember. See, he says that in order to heal, you remember what was happening before the healing was needed. And he says, and you also try to remember what the person is going to be like when they have been healed. So if I'm in a relationship with you and I need to have a healing in this relationship with you, I need to remember what the peace that we had before this upset happened, and I need to remember the peace we're going to have after this upset has been healed. That's not what I focus on. I don't know about you, all of a sudden I'm seeing why I haven't been able to get the answers that I wanted. I'm not using Holy Spirit's perception. So I'm upset with you about something, Susan. So I've got to remember how I felt about you before I got upset with you, and I've got to remember how I'm going to feel about you after I have healed this upset with you. That's how I heal. See, that's the answer. It's totally different from the way my mind works, right? Then he says, this is an alteration of the time sequence. Obviously, because I'm remembering what you were before you got upset, and I'm remembering what you're going to be like in the future after you're healed. So that is an alteration of the time sequence. All of a sudden, guess what? This book is really brilliant. What it's doing is, my ego loves to dwell on the past and loves to dwell on the future. My ego has a hard time being in the now. Anybody else?
Right.
Don't you see how this is really tricking us to use our ego to heal us? Because it would have been said, remember what the person was like before y'all got upset. That's the past. My ego can do the past. And then he says, then think about what it would be like when you all have been healed. Well, my ego can do that because it's good at fantasizing about what could happen in the future. The Course in Miracles just uses our own ego, our own natural way of thinking, to heal us. Because my ego can do that. Oh, remember what it was like when me and you went to the movie and we had a good time, and then remember what it could possibly be like when we had a good time in the future instead of focusing on the upset that we're having right now. I'm going to remember. Okay, babe, I know you and me are mad at each other. Let's go ahead and communicate whatever needs to be communicated. But at the same time, let's remember the loving thoughts and the loving times we've had. And let's focus on the loving times that we could have together in the future. Poof, our argument is now healed. It's done. It's over. See, that's what I'm talking about with like the relationship seminar Saturday. It is not going to be the typical thing that people think it's going to be about. It's going to be stuff just like what I just did. Look, baby, you know, this is what I'm feeling right now. I hope I'm wrong about this, but this is what's going on within me right now. I hope I'm wrong about this, but this is what's going on within me right now. And what I want, and I might be upset. I might be so upset I can't even think straight. Okay, whoever's saner at the moment is supposed to remember how grateful they are to this person for getting an opportunity to repay their debt. You've been really good to me. Now you're afraid. This is my opportunity to show you my gratitude for all the things you've done for me by, when you're upset, remembering who you really were in the past before you got upset, and remembering who you really are going to be when you get through being upset, and at the same time allowing you to communicate what you feel right now in this moment safely. Healing of argument. Me personally, if I was with a person who was not willing to do that, I'm convinced that if I'm standing in front of you, even if you don't want to cooperate, but I could take this moment to remember something loving or project something loving in the future, I would be giving myself more peace in this moment. So I would experience a healing whether or not you studied the course or not. I feel better in that moment. But I'm also creating a state of mind that the Holy Spirit, aha, can come through. Remember, it says that the ones that you're the board of attack and all you're going to do is share perceptions that are benefit, you're going to have a quality shift in your mind that will create a healing in that situation. How do I know it won't work if I haven't tried it? I don't know about you. Have any of you all tried this? No. And so the ego would be quick to try to judge that without even trying it. Wouldn't it? Yeah, before we even try it, we already judge it. Us would be more excited about it. Right. We would be jumping up and down right now if we hadn't already prejudged that it wasn't going to work, or we had another way we'd rather deal with it. Because my ego, the ego says the answer is attack, the answer is attack, the answer is anger and attack, the answer is anger and attack, the answer is projection, anger and attack. So the ego wants to project, get mad, and attack. So you're right, Ellen. The ego is not going to like the answers that come from the Holy Spirit. That's why your ego can't read the course.
Well, my biggest struggle is sometimes I read this and I think, this is so simple.
I know.
And then I get mad at myself because it's like, like, this is so, I sit here and I'm like, this is so simple. Why do I forget it when I walk out of the door?
Uh-huh.
Why do I have such a hard time, like, doing this sometimes?
Mm-hmm.
Fire training.
There's a lesson in the workbook called I Am One Self United with My Creator. That workbook lesson describes in detail all of the stuff that you're talking about that you go through when you're trying to study the course. The forgiveness, the wanting to remember it. He runs down that whole little thing.
Yeah.
So if you get a chance, read that work. It's called I Am One Self United with My Creator. He talks about that.
Okay.
About you study, you read it, and then you forget it, and you walk out. And, you know, he goes through the whole thing. He said, but then he also gives an answer that the ego doesn't like. He says that, and it's just so beautiful. He says, being tolerant of your weaknesses, give your weaknesses no power. See, I thought being intolerant of my weakness was the way you dealt with weakness. And the Course says exactly the opposite. Say,
yeah.
If you have tolerance for your weakness, then your weakness will have no power over you. It's the, see, because every time I do that, am I not attacking myself? Oh, you know, by now I've studied this, I ought to be levitating in front of y'all. You know what I'm saying? As long as I'm studying this, I ought to be like, glow. You know, and it's like, you know, it's so funny. And he says, but if I was tolerant for my weakness, I go, hey, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate my good efforts and everything I've done so far, and everything I've done has been fine. You know, hey, you know, I know I still get mad sometimes. Hey, if I was Jesus, I wouldn't be here. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if I had tolerance for my weakness, what happened? I would go, yeah, I still went off on somebody today, and then I'd go right to my lesson and start to read it. But if I didn't have any tolerance for my weakness, I wouldn't pick up my book. Because I would go, oh, it's no point. You see what I'm saying? I'm mad, you know. So, I'm mad at myself. I'm not doing this. So if I have intolerance, it's a trick to make me stop. But if I have tolerance for my weakness or tolerance for yours, aha, it also would give your weakness no power either. If I would go, you know, a person who doesn't know the truth, they're going to lose their temper. They're going to project. They're going to be selfish. They're going to manipulate. They're afraid. So I know that. So I'm tolerant of that. And so therefore, that quality in you does not have any effect on me. See the difference? Because I know you're an ego. You know, I know you don't study truth. I know you don't know what the truth is. So I can be tolerant of you. I'm not going to expect you to act like a loving person when I'm seeing you don't have loving thoughts. I don't expect you to be a loving person, because you obviously don't have loving thoughts. But I used to do the opposite. The person was being mean, and then I would get mad at them because they weren't producing loving thoughts, but they were mean. Mean people do mean. Mean people don't do nice. So if you're around somebody who's insecure, who's afraid, who projects, don't expect that person to be kind. And you'll have tolerance for their weakness. And then when they do it, you'll be prepared. Okay, then what do? Well, you remember what that person really is, or what that person was, or how it was before they needed healing, and what they're going to be like after they get through going off. I mean, this is deep, y'all. This is deep.
Yeah, it personally is like attacking the attacker. That's the ego thing.
Yes.
And if you love the attacker, and
yes.
It's more than just tolerance. It's loving that Holy Spirit perception in a loving way might just look like tolerance, but it's love. You're not attacking.
You're not attacking is love. You're not attacking. The ego says, attack the attacker, and this will get rid of the attacker. We're seeing that. We are seeing this law played out so beautifully in the war in Iraq. We're watching it right before our eyes. The more that we attack, the more we attack the attackers, the more attack happens. Now it's spread to Spain. And then it went to London. You know, it's like we're watching it happen, but the ego mind says to itself, my brothers and sisters, I love them, they tell themselves, what? You just haven't attacked good enough. So you got to make your attack more sophisticated. You got to make you've got to have more intelligence with your attack. You got to get other countries to cooperate with the attack. And so all we're getting is a lesson in how attack operates. It's not like we're supposed to sit here and figure out how to solve the problems in the Middle East. What we're supposed to see as spiritual beings is, oh, they're acting out the laws of fear. So I get a chance to see how the laws of attack operate so that I won't apply that principle in my own personal life.
And then we turn around and call them insurgents when we're in their country.
Whatever we come up with to justify the attack is how we try to feel innocent about the attack. See, because you don't feel justified in attacking somebody for no reason at all. So in order to attack, you have to create justifications for it. So the mere fact that I want to attack people will continually attract into my life things that go wrong that upset me that I feel like I need to attack people about. I don't even realize I'm the manifester of all of the stuff that's making me mad because I want to attack. Because I got to have justification. If I don't like you, I got to have a justification for that. So if I walk in this room and I don't like you, that's a request for some kind of perception or circumstance where me and you won't get along. I gotta have justification. So he's saying, but if you're looking through the Holy Spirit, then you're not seeing through any attack. I don't walk in the room wanting to attack you. I walk into the room wanting to accept you. And then I want whatever I say to you to be something that benefits you. Okay, so that's gonna heal my mind, produce a qualitative shift, and now I am in a reparative state. I'm repairing. My mind is healing, right? So the next thing he says do is look at what the person was before the healing was needed and the way they're gonna be after they're healed. So I'm gonna look at you like, if you told me you wanted to lose 10 pounds, then what I would do, so again, you can break this down to a very physical level. I would say to you, do you have a picture of what you look like when you were your ideal size? Let's say there was a size. Right? Okay, and you bring me the picture. Okay, so what we could do is I could look at and remember the way that you looked when you looked the way you wanted to look. And we could also look at it as the way you're going to look when you get through doing your thing. And that's what I would do. We would focus on the way you were before you thought you needed the healing and the way you'll be after the healing has happened. I mean, that's if you want to bring it down to a physical level. But this is talking about ultimately a spiritual level. We all know that. But I'm just saying what I've learned over the years is that the course is totally practical. That you can take these principles and you'll learn how to apply them to any situation, even something like losing weight. But you'll also know that you won't lose weight as long as you are attacking yourself in your perception. Because he's already said, the healing mind has a perception that's devoid of attack. So first of all, I got to stop beating myself up for being the way that I am now. I got to understand, I'm okay whether I weigh 300 pounds or whether I weigh 10 pounds. And if I can't pull that off, if I can't feel good about the way I look now, then I can't feel good about the way I am now, and that's my call for love. That's a request for love to come and heal my mind. That's a request. When I'm putting myself down, that's like saying, love come to me and heal my mind. Love come to me and heal my mind. Love come to me and heal my mind. God come to me and heal my mind. It looks like this. Oh God, I'm mad at myself because I just can't lose this weight. When I look at my body, oh my God, I don't like the way my body looks. Now what I'm really saying is, I'm calling for love to come heal me. I'm calling for love to come heal me. You got to know what you're really saying instead of getting lost in the form of what you're saying. The form is, oh my God, I wish I had a smaller stomach. Okay, that's just the form of my call. But what I'm really saying is, oh God, come heal my mind. Oh love, come and heal my perception of this. That's the Course says, that's what you're really saying. And so you'll get to a point where when you get mad at yourself, instead of beating yourself up, your mind will have been trained to go, oh, I'm putting myself down. That's my call for love. And you'll just let it go. You're going to get to that point. Just be patient with yourself. That's all I'm saying. It works. It works. You're going to reprogram your own negative reactions It's going to be so cool. He says that it gets to the point that your mind will start correcting your errors automatically for you, because it knows you don't deserve to suffer, because you reoriented yourself. So he says, as soon as you feel bad, it won't even matter what you feel bad about, because your mind will go, it don't matter what he's feeling bad about, he doesn't deserve to feel bad. So it'll just heal that perception instantly, automatically. But at first, we do a little manual thing, you know what I'm saying? And the little manual thing is, you know, I'm really mad at my boss today. That's a call for love to come and heal my mind. I'm not going to call them for a week. And that's a call for love to come heal my mind. Then I don't focus on, you know, maybe I should figure out why I should call them. That's not necessary, because that was just the form the call was made in. I need to get lost in that. That's the trick. The trick is to keep me from saying to myself, this is a call for love. This is a call for God to come heal my mind. See, that's what my ego don't want me to say. My ego want me to say, I'm upset with my mama. I feel bad because I shouldn't be upset with my mama. So what can I say to my mama? That's what your ego wants your mind to do. Or say, God, I'm really not a good college student. I've been studying all these years and I'm still mad at my mama, right? That's the trick. What Spirit wants us to do is go, God, I'm really mad at my mama. God, oh, that is my call for love to come and heal my mind. I'm feeling a deep desire for the universe to come and help me right now. That's what I really should be saying, instead of figuring out what to say to my mama. And just like you just got through saying, Connie. See, that's easier. See, that's easier than trying to figure out what to say to your mama. And your ego, that sounds too easy. That sounds too simple. And you see that power come up?
Harold, I got meant to... Our call for love, I think the United States has been crying out with Katrina, our call for love to heal our nation and that. Because we are now more concerned about sending money to our people in the United States, and we have forgotten about Iraq and that, and we are calling out for love. And I think it is just beautiful that what's happening right now.
Great. Well, the Holy Spirit perception would be a perception that was devoid of attack. And it would be a perception where you say something like, isn't it great that somehow or another this is benefiting us, helping us? So you just used the Holy Spirit's perception.
Yes, sir.
So that means that you did a reparation of your mind, and you're focusing on the way things will be after they're healed. See, that's what I'm saying. It really is another way of looking at things. But the cool part is that there's a whole world of perception and people that go with this new way of looking at things, just like we've experienced a whole world of perception and people that went with our fearful way of looking at things. And that's what excites me. When I was in my fearful, guilty, angry mind, I also saw fearful, guilty, angry people who sometimes weren't. Anybody else? Okay. All right. So that went with my attack perception, my ego perception. And what the book is telling me is like, Earl, you don't realize it, brother, but the laws of perception can work another way. If you use this state of mind, then you will then be physically, just like before, in another world that you didn't die, but you'll be seeing the reflection of freedom-loving, innocent, happy, fun minds. And the people that go with that. And you'll still be driving down the street, and you'll still be walking around in your body just like you do right now, but you're using the Holy Spirit's perception, so now you get another perception of the world. And you get another, everything is different. The people are different. Everything, the content, changing the trip, you out. And it almost seems like when you're talking to people around you, and all they're having is conflict with people, it's like it'll actually feel like they're talking about another world that you don't see. You know it's real, to them, and you know it used to be real to you, but it's no longer your personal experience. You're not surrounded by people who are attacking you and trying to say things that don't benefit you. Because, see, you had a sufficient quantitative change in your thinking that you went into a qualitative shift, and now your world is attracting new people. Some people from the old perception will seem to move with you into the new perception. Some people won't. They will need someone to play the part that you used to play, right? And your peace may become so important to you that you may just choose out of certain relationships in your life. So that's what usually happens. Some people change with you. Some people replace you with somebody else who will give them what you used to. And some people you're going to say, I love you, but I bless you and release you. You know, I really want peace in my life. And for some reason, you're still choosing for conflict all the time and attack all the time. You're innocent, but I'm going to choose out of this relationship. And that's going to be the most loving thing that you could do for them and for you. Because by you choosing out, you're teaching them that attack will not get you what you want. And they need to sit, because if you constantly stay there and let them attack you, then you're convincing them that attack is how you keep a relationship. That's what anger, that's why people use anger. Because they say, if I get mad at you enough, if I make you feel guilty enough, then you're going to stay. And you're going to do what I say. And you're going to cooperate. And we can stay together because you gave in to my attack. Right? Mm-hmm. So when you succumb to someone's attack, you're teaching them that to attack you is how they get what they want from you. Because you let them see that their attack could get them what they wanted by cooperating with them while they are attacking you. You're trying harder to please them and harder to love them.
What is it, of course, this definition of love again? I was looking. I know you've said it.
My favorite is that love is freedom, and that you can tell what love is by what love is not. It's not fear, it's not guilt, it's not anger, it's not depression, it's not separation. It's not. He said, you really can't describe what love is or truth is, but you can just say what it's not. And by focusing on what it's not, you learn what it is. So in other words, if I go into a relationship now with somebody and I meet somebody and what I feel is fear to communicate who I really am, or I feel fear to really express who I really am, then I immediately tell myself what I'm feeling for that person is fear. It's not love. Because I would never be afraid of someone I really loved. And that's all, that's as far as I go. Does that mean that we can't get to the point that we can love each other? No, we could get to that point if we both recognized that we wanted to, but we also knew we didn't know how to love each other. In other words, I want to be in a relationship with you. I feel some fear. I want to go beyond that fear. Do you want to go beyond the fear? Yeah, I want to go beyond the fear too. So then we can get past it to the love that we share. But let's tell the truth and admit that we got some love, some fear in our love. And he says that if there's fear in the love, and this is all in the book. He said if fear is in the love, then you know the love is not dependable. So you wouldn't put all your eggs in the basket of someone who was fearful of you or attacking you, because you know their love will not be dependable, that there's a gap in it, that they could let you down, that sometimes the fear could come out. You know that. So if I'm getting ready to start hanging out with somebody as a friend or a lover who I know is afraid and suspicious and guilty and angry, I know their love is not going to be dependable. In other words, I know I can't depend on them. Now, I'll be open to you being consistent. I'll be open-minded about that. But I'm not going to put myself in a position consciously that I'm dependent on you.
Because of attack?
Because I know that if you have fear, then I know that you don't know how to consistently be loving all the time.
You will attack.
Right. I know that you, wherever there's fear,
you know there's going to be a
there's
going,
some, somewhere. The, somewhere you, what you know is the fear could come out. That's what I'm saying. That it, you just need to know that if there's some fear in my love, no, I sometimes might get upset, that I might get angry, that I might get depressed, or I might not do what I say I'm going to do because I have fear. And you need to know that. You see what I mean? So what does that do? That makes a person take responsibility for entering that relationship. It makes them take, all of a sudden, if I know you don't know how to love perfectly, and I don't know how to love perfectly, but I still want to be with you, then I'm going to take responsibility for being with you. And so when you do slip, then I'm not going to feel betrayed and devastated. Because I already know you don't know how to love like God yet. And I don't know how to love like God yet. And I'm not going to even put that unrealistic expectation on you. I'm not going to expect you to be someone who never makes a mistake, never makes an error, never is late, never gets upset. There never's going to be a time that you don't keep your word one time and I'm through with you. So I'm not going to be that kind of person because I know you don't know how to love like God and I don't either. So why would I expect you to be perfect? I would have tolerance for the fact that, yeah, I know you really want to be in integrity and you're going to do everything in your power to be in integrity, and I am too. And so if for some reason we slip, then we need to learn how to forgive. We need to learn how to talk about it, communicate about it, reset our goal. You know what I'm saying? We need to go be, we can work this out because both of us know we're not perfect. I got tolerance. See the difference? It's like I used to want to hold everybody to standards that I could not live up to myself. And then get mad at them about it. As if I never make mistakes. As if I do every single thing exactly like I say I'm going to do it. And all of a sudden I realized how crazy that was. But I was really doing that. I was like really expecting everybody to literally just not going to be perfect. You don't never lie. You don't never deceive. You always keep your word. You always do whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's like I went, man, are you out of your mind? You're out of your mind to have that kind of expectation in terms of believing that it could never go any other way but that. You know what I'm saying? Me going, you know, it's like, yeah, they're going to even I know they love me, but I'm going to convince myself that there's no way possible that there could ever be any fear in them. That's crazy. And that's what this book has made me say, man, you know, when you have tolerance for their weakness, when you have intention and they have sincere intention, but you both understand that you're learning, then if you do make an error, you all can forgive each other because you know that's really not your goal is to hurt each other, then you all are going to go into that qualitative shift. And you're going to have a healing. And y'all are going to have some peace together. But you get with somebody who has no tolerance for your foibles, your weaknesses, so you're going to the hell world. You're going to the fear world. Just get ready. You're getting ready to be totally, first of all, you're going to start lying. You're going to start hiding. You're not going to let them really see what you're thinking and feeling. You're going to start being whatever you think they want. They're going to be with somebody that's not even a person that they know. That's what's going to happen. You know, so I love this book because it gave me such tolerance for my weaknesses. And then I stopped having them as much. It was weird. Mm-hmm. I stopped expecting you all to be perfect, and guess what? I received more love from people than I ever have. It's like I'm watching the Holy Spirit's perception create the reparation and the qualitative shift. It's really real. So I'm going to stop here. It's 2:01. You know, I'm trying to see y'all stuff as a call for love. Why should mine be sins? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the way I treat it. Like, I see you all, I try to true fast on somebody else than I will on myself. I try to see what you do as a call for love and still be tempted to condemn myself. You know, so he says your mind will automatically apply to you what you apply to other people. That's a universal law. So if you apply it to everybody else, your mind is going to automatically start applying it to you. You don't have to worry about it. You just start to feel more innocent when you get upset. Great.